one grade two, grade three in the same cluster. At least this is something that on some honorable members will be able to relate to say, we know what you're talking about when you talk about multi-grade classes. Some of us may come from there. But when you talk about farm schools, children in those forgotten areas, the minister said, from a political point of view, this is where we are going to start. And the rich and the famous will deal with them later on. Our children, those of us who are in the middle class and upper class, they will be attended to later. We think about the poor, the poorest of the poor, which is phase one. And the rollout has to happen in the financial, by the end of 2021-2022, financial year, we should have completed all this category of schools, multi-grade special farm schools, and a majority of quintile 1 to 2 schools. Now phase two, which we must complete by the end of financial year 2022-2023, are the quintile 1 to 3 and some of the special schools. So you realize that according to the plan, we have special schools cutting across. And there's a reason why we say that, because the cost of delivering to special schools is almost 3 times the cost of delivering to an ordinary public school. But we are not using the cost to say they will be attended to later. We're only looking at the realities of the budget and in the midst of budget cuts and using the limited resources that you have responsibly. It is an issue of saying we need to be realistic and be systematic in addressing this. So it is not about the cost, but it's about the complexity of rolling out these solutions. And the last phase, which is for targeting quintile 4 to 5, the affluent schools, most of which maybe in townships and in cities, will then see them last. And this category of schools, a majority of them already have these things out of their own. The parents are able to pay those type of fees. And SGBs then are able to drive their own programs on ICTs. And some of the big corporates, where the alumni come from those schools, they always go back and plug back. So there's very little work to be done here in quintile 1, 4 to 5, but a whole lot of work has to be done in phase 1 and phase 2. Now, back in 2014, through the Department of Communication, then the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services, ICASA, which is a regulatory body in this space of ICTs, published what were called the Universal Service and Access Obligations. Now, these obligations were placed on the network operators that, as part of their licensing or the condition for their licensing, they were obliged to provide connectivity to an X number of schools. At the time, ICASA had pronounced that those schools had to be 5,250, as reflected in the presentation. And these 5,550 were to be divided amongst all the network operators. But the big network operators, MTN, Vodacom, and Cell C, were each obliged to provide connectivity to 1,500 schools. And the small one, which was Newtel at the time, which is now is called Liquid Telco, was allocated 750 schools. Now, this obligation, the network operator, if they did not meet these conditions that were placed on them, they could lose their licenses. So for them to preserve their licenses, they had to provide this. But the agreement at the time was that they would provide connectivity. But like the DDG indicated, the DB then said, what value is it to have a school with connectivity, but they don't have devices, the teachers have not been trained on how to use the device, there is no content. Then we then renegotiated that we had to develop what you call the end-to-end solution. That said, the device, teacher training, content, and LTSN. Now, it's the entire ecosystem. Then the network operators then were obliged to ensure that they don't just divide, they don't just supply devices, but they had to ensure that teachers are trained on how to use those very same devices, that the devices had to have content, and so forth. So that was in 2014, and that these obligations were for a period of 5 years, ending March of 2020. So meaning in 2 weeks' time, is it 2 weeks' time? Yeah. In less than 2 weeks' time, the obligation is coming to an end. Meaning, past this, the network operators are not obliged to provide the devices to schools. But within this plan of 5 years, they were to provide to ordinary schools, and they were also to provide to special schools. So special schools were included in this 5,250. We had a total of about 560 special schools at the time. But the number of special schools has since come down to 474. It has come down. Now, the network operators have not been able to meet the supply to the special schools. Now, as a result of that, ICASA has then pronounced an extension to the expiry that is supposed to happen in 2 weeks' time, and it has given them additional 2 years to ensure that by the end of 2 years, every special school in this country has devices with content, teachers trained, and they've got connectivity as well. Now, to provide you with progress then with regards to connectivity, I'm going to break it down to those areas of focus, connectivity, teacher development, content, and so forth, so that honorable members can get a sense of, okay, where are we now since then with regards to connectivity. Connectivity to ordinary schools. You will see the work that has been done by each of the network operators, and we have broken that down per province so that members can be able to trace it. It's okay, if I want to look at the Free State, if I want to look at Northwest, if I want to, what are the numbers there? What is the progress with regard to that, that province? And the slide provides for all the four network operators as to where they are. You will realize that it is only Vodacom that has met the rollout to ordinary schools. And Vodacom has actually even exceeded what they were supposed to do within ordinary schools. You remember the number that we had was 5,520. If you look at the total number of schools, there is 4,697. And as I indicated, the shortfall is because of in the main of the work that was to be done within special schools, which network operators have not been able to do. That is why you see that number of the total of 4,600, which is a shortfall to the number that I indicated of 5,250 that I indicated earlier on. Now, the breakdown of connectivity through the obligations, and not only through the obligations, but this time we are adding connectivity that was provided by USASA. You will see where I said the UNO, those are the obligations, and USASA, that these are the main providers of connectivity into ordinary schools. I already spoke about, the slide takes you back to 2014. Remember when I said 2014 was when it was provided. To say where were we were in 2014, the baseline that we have that in 2014, We had 12,268 schools that had connectivity, either through telecom or through other means and what have you. That is where we were at the time. And this constituted 49.49% of the schools at the time. And you see as we progress and when you go right to the end, the last column there, which is the baseline. So we are giving you 2014, and then in 2017, what was the baseline? In 2018, where were we? And then in 2019, 2020, where are we? We are at 17,514 schools that were connected. And this then translated from the initial 49% that we were in 2014 to 70.1% in 2019. So you will realize that network operators have assisted us greatly to move from just under 50% to just over 70% of schools that have connectivity. And without the network operators, we would have not reached these type of figures. I know that as public representatives, you'll be concerned about the remaining 30%. You say, then what is happening to the remaining 30%, and what are the plans to ensure that they are not left behind as well, that they benefit like the 71%. Now, this slide gives you what that has happened with regard to providing connectivity to special schools. Now, you see that MTS Foundation is the one that is actually leading with regard to providing connectivity to special schools. But I want to clarify here that this connectivity was not part of the obligation. This is the work that they did out of their own goodwill. So it was not linked to their license. Whether they did it or they did not do it, this one, it had nothing to do with that. Because they were doing it through the foundation. You realize that I said MTN Foundation. So we must separate the corporate from the foundation. So the obligations are placed on the corporate, but not on the foundation. Foundations do CSI. Look good, feel good by the organization, that we are a responsible organization, and we are doing this to assist. Now, MTN connected 43 schools, and the Honorable Member Bokopane Zulu, the Deputy Minister for Social Development, was a champion of working with MTN to ensure that children with disabilities are not left behind. And it was with the work that was led by a colleague of yours to say, what are you doing? What are we doing as government? How do you work with us to ensure that we support these learners? Vodacom did some work, which was 24, and we give you the breakdown to say, where are these schools? Per province, a total of 67 schools were then connected through the goodwill of the network operators. But now what we're going to do is when we roll out to special schools, we are not going to count these numbers in to say you have already done 43. They're going to be given the full quota of schools to do. So some of these schools are going to benefit twice because they benefited from the CSI initiative and they're going to benefit through the obligations that they're going to have more devices as a result of that. This slide is just a graphical representation of the previous slide. But what we, and it's showing where we come from 2014 and moving right up to 2019 at 70.69%. But there are two notes that we want members to take notice of. The first one is that the total number of schools connected to date is 17,514. So meaning it is not all 24,000 schools that are connected. So we are saying to members, there are schools, as you are talking, that do not have connectivity at all. That is the first thing that we want to bring to attention. The second point that we want to bring to attention is that when we talk about connectivity, it must be understood this way. What we call high-speed connectivity and what we call low-speed connectivity. And it must be very clear in the minds of honorable members that, okay, in terms of each of these, the figure that we're talking about was 71%. So how many are on high speed, how many are on low speed? So that you've got a clear mind of that. We only have a small number that is on high speed. Now when you talk about high speed in educational terms, we're talking about speeds that would allow multiple classes at the same time to be able to log into the internet and every teacher deliver lessons. And we sound the internet collapsing. That is what we're talking about. So if you've got 40 teachers in a school, you have about 40 of them using ICTs in their classes, and each one of them being able to deliver lessons, being able to show videos, being able to show whatever, animations, being able to do whatever that they want to do. That is high-speed connectivity. Now, low-speed connectivity is those speeds that, you know, if one teacher is locked in, the others must wait for this teacher to log out for them to come in, to log in. So that is the simplest non-technical way that I could explain that. So that you understand that, though we're talking about 71% of schools being connected, a majority of them are on low speed. You can't have a number of teachers, all of them at the same time, delivering lessons. They must wait, let me do it. You'll only come in once I'm done. So that is what we're talking about. But the problem is that these speeds were determined by ICASA, so they're not determined by us. They were legislated. So the network operators, they did not break any law when they provided those type of speeds, because the regulator said, you can provide this type of speed. So the only way to push them to provide higher speeds is through the sister department communication that must then, through the regulator ICASA, increase the number of speeds. We have already submitted the ideal speeds to telecommunication to say, if we are given this type of speed, then we will be happy. Now, we also have teacher centers across the country, and the numbers are there to tell members that in Eastern Cape we've got 16 of them, in Gauteng there are 21, in KwaZulu-Natal there are 49, a total of 147 of them. Now, the number of teacher centers with connectivity, there are 108. So we still have teacher centers in the country that don't have any connectivity. So there are centers, teacher can come in and workshops can be conducted, but the facilitators of such training will never be able to use digital means to deliver the workshops. Teachers will not be exposed to ICTs and connectivity. But members must not understand that we are saying these centers don't have computers. And a lot of them have computers. They've got a computer room. But this computer room is not linked to internet. So teachers can still access training materials on the desktop computers and laptops and all of you, but this content must be preloaded. So it must be preloaded on the device and then they'll be able to access it. So we are talking about breaking into the internet, that they won't be able to break into the internet, but they'll only be able to use what is in front of them. So, but with regard to 104, they're able to break into the internet and find other materials that are freely available in the internet. Now, coming to plans with regard to connectivity, I gave you progress with connectivity. Now, the question is then, what are the plans? These are the plans. The focus is on special schools. That for this financial year, the plan is to focus on special schools. And those are the numbers per network operator that Vodacom has been allocated, 140 schools, MTN 102, Liquid Telecom 50, Cell C. They've not made any commitment, Cell C. But this is a rollout only for 2020 up to 2021. Remember, I indicated that special schools, we're planning to roll out to them even beyond 2021. Yes. So when you look at the 293, but Mr. Kaman, you said we've got 477 special schools. What's happening to the rest? Are they not in your plan? So this is the plan to say for 2020-2021, that is what we are going to focus on. Now, stepping off connectivity, coming to the devices themselves, what is the progress? The devices that we have rolled out through the USOs. And the number of devices that we have rolled out through the USOs, broken down into provinces, we indicate how many schools have received. You remember we said we rolled out to 4,697, and we said that is not the 5,250 that I spoke about, and I explained the difference. So we have rolled out to this. It translates to 112,000 tablets that were rolled out. If you're talking about the number of tablets, but the solution did not just focus on rolling out of tablets. We were also rolling out, the solution had laptops for teachers. To say it was an X number of tablets per school, and then that package had a laptop or two for teachers to use, that would link and connect to all these tablets that are in front of the teacher. And we also gave them local servers where they didn't have to, because of connectivity challenges, they don't have to break into the internet to access, but the local servers are loaded, pre-loaded with lots of content, and then they're able to break into the local server to access that content. And work speeds are very low. Teachers then, when the traffic is very low, usually it's after hours, after 8 o'clock in the evening, the traffic on the internet highway is very low. That is the time that they are able to break into the internet, download whatever that they have, and save it onto the server. So that when children come in the morning, they don't have to break into the internet. They have already caught what they want. They have stored it locally. And now they're able to access it from the local server. And there were also data projectors that were given. Now, provinces, like the DDG indicated, do not only depend on the rollout of devices and devices from the network operators. Provinces, we are checking each province to see how much they have budgeted for rollout of devices, and we call this provincially driven device rollout. So this is over and above the figures that we gave you for the USO. There is this work that has been done, and you can see we have sampled some of the provinces. Eastern Cape has rolled out 64,000 laptops for teachers. Free State has not rolled out anything for teachers. Free State. Gauteng has rolled out 7,700 smart classrooms in 487 schools, and this translates to 16,000 teachers receiving devices and 43,000 tablets rolled out in 56 schools. And you can see KwaZulu-Natal also has rolled out laptops for teachers. So the slide gives you a sense of what teachers have received and what learners have received, so that honorable members can get a sense. Western Cape, you can see that they've rolled out 28,000 mobile devices to learners, and they've also rolled out 1,160 ICT suites. So there are other provinces that we did not include in there, but this was to give honorable members the sense of are provinces doing something, or they are just holding hands and waiting for national to assist them. Provinces are also doing something to ensure that we get this. Now, special schools, all special schools, according to our plans, will be provided with solutions, but special schools don't just get the laptops or the device and whatever. Over and above what ordinary schools get, they also get what we call assistive devices. And the solutions for special schools is complex, because you don't come with a standard solution and then say, roll out, within a week, I will be done. What happens is that we have to audit every special school, because the needs for a blind child are not the same as the needs for a child living with autism. They're not the same as a deaf child. So the needs for these children are different, and the solution even becomes more complex when you've got multiple disabilities within the same school. Because you need to know how many blind are in the school, how many deaf. But if it's just a school for the blind, it's easy. Once you define a solution for the blind, then you roll out. But in a multiple disability school, it becomes even more complex, because you need to ensure that you cater for every child. Now, in ordinary schools, the solution allows for children to share the devices. They lock in with, it is all of us, we can use this device that is in front of me, but for you to use it, you've got your own login details. You can come in and then log in, and then be able to access your material. I come in, I can't log with your details, I must have my own login details, and but you use the same. But with learners with disabilities members, it's complex, because children can't share these devices. A blind child can't wait for another blind child to finish working, and then they say, okay, borrow me, let me use. For children living with disabilities, the minister said, children must have personal devices. We know the president announced that not only children with disabilities, he said every child. But he's saying, should we be unable to reach the directive by the president? But for learners with disabilities, we must reach it. Children must not share. They must have their own personal devices. It's a huge call. But the minister is determined to mobilize industry to see how we actually do this. This is why the minister hosted the roundtable with CEOs and top executives of the big five mobile operators on the 9th of November. And at this meeting, the minister was presenting this plan to say, this is our plan. This is what we want to do by this time. This is what we want to do by this time. We want to start with Quintal 1, 2. We want to start with special schools, farm schools, multi-grade schools. And then we are going to move to this. So the minister presented these plans to them and made a plea with them. With the network operators giving an extension of 2 years to roll out in special schools by ICASA, the minister pleaded with them and said, 2 years is a long time. Is it not possible to accelerate this? Can't we do it much faster? And the minister then turns the DG with the responsibility of having one-on-one meetings with all the CEOs. Post the roundtable, and the DDG has already met with Vodacom and has already met with MTN. Is planning to meet with the Newtel, and is planning to meet with Cell C and Telkom as well. And out of those meetings, out of the roundtable driven by the minister and the follow-up meetings by the DG, Vodacom has committed that they are going to ensure that by the end of June this year, meaning in 3 months' time, not in 2 years, in 3 months' time, they would have covered all the special schools that have been allocated to them. They will make budget available to ensure that that is done. MTN said, we will do it within one financial year, meaning we are not going to do it in 2 years, we'll do it in 1 year. By the end of 2020-21 financial year, meaning March next year, MTN would have covered all the schools allocated to them. We still waiting to meet with Cell C and with Liquid Telecom to get the same type of commitment from them. But the minister is driving this, and she's pushing to ensure that by the end of the current administration, we have met most of the commitments that the ruling party and the parliament have made to the nation. Now, as I indicated, I'm going to skip this one. The only point that I need to highlight, the DDG already spoke to that, we have concluded the audit of all the schools, the special schools. We know what each school needs. We know how many learners are there. We know how many teachers must be trained in those schools. We know what type of devices must be provided. We know what assistive devices must be provided in addition to, for deaf learners or partially hearing learners, they need devices that are going to amplify the sound so that they can hear. For partially blind learners, they have devices that are going to increase the font for them to be able to see on a screen that they would not ordinarily be able to see if it was there. For blind learners, we have already done audit with regard to the brain material that is required to assist those learners to learn. And the minister presented this audit to the meeting that I spoke about, the roundtable. I've already spoken to that. I will skip that slide. I've already spoken to that. I will skip that. Now, the audit in terms of phase 2 to 3, meaning to check the readiness of multi-grade schools, farm schools, quintal 1 to 3, we have already started the process of auditing these schools. Multi-grade schools, we have over 3,300 of them in the country, multi-grade schools. We know that Parliament, and led by the ruling party, indicate that we need to eradicate these multi-grade schools. Children must be placed in environments where they are not crammed into one class in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. If it meant closing non-viable schools and making plans to ensure that these children are placed in other schools, that we do that. But the instruction that we got was, as long as these schools are still there, they must be supported. We cannot say because we are planning to close them, we are not going to support them. While they are still in existence, they're for the right to education, and they must be supported, including farm schools and Quintal 1 to schools. I will skip some of these slides. Now, with regard to audit of phase 3 schools, we will do this audit in 2021, and we will check all from Quintal 1 to 5 schools what is actually available in all those schools. Now, coming to LTSN, the number of ordinary schools that have been resourced in terms of availability of digital LTSM, the total number is there, that all schools have access to this material. Some of them may not necessarily have the devices, but they have access to content, because this content is loaded on portals, is loaded on websites, and we also deliver it on devices and memory sticks. We take every approach. We don't leave it to chance that those schools that cannot break into the internet, that we say that what we drive to schools with lots terabytes of contents on memory sticks, and we deliver it to a school. Not to make it an excuse that because you are not into the internet, you can't have access to these devices. Progress teacher training, and this is very, very important, and we know that our politicians always remind to say, don't leave teachers behind. You can put these things in schools. If teachers are not trained, they are not going to be used. It's important that teachers must be trained on how to use. Now, training on ICTs is packaged into three levels. So teachers start at what you call the basic or entry level, where you teach them how to open this, how to access what, at what level, and all that. Those basics and fundamentals. How to access this readily available material that are there. Now, the next level is what you call the intermediate level. And this intermediate level, that is where teachers are with fluency, be able to operate this thing, access the content, and they're able to develop some material for themselves. They can even develop PowerPoints as part of their lessons. They're able to develop their lesson plans and at the basic level. And you've got what you call the advanced level. Now these are the geniuses. These are the ones who create sophisticated material. They even create videos. They even are able to share with other people and all that. They're extremely fluent. They don't need any support, these ones. So the aim is to take our teachers to that level, where they're able to use these things out here and with great fluency. It should also be noted that teacher training includes all categories of schools. But what we usually do when we train teachers, we don't just start them with how to use this thing, how to create a lesson, how to do it. We expose them to what you call a change management program. Because some teachers, they use this thing, but when they experience problems, they leave it, they go back to chalk and duster. And I think all of us would do that. Once you get frustrated, you revert to the trusted method. And this thing is frustrating, you leave it. So we work on change management so that they can embrace the change that the technology comes in, and they don't quit when it becomes difficult, that they will be resilient and continue using this to a point of fluency. Now, the next slide then gives you a sense of how many teachers have been trained and which year. And we trace it back from 2015-2016. If you can see on the top left there, and in the middle 2017-18, and the far right, we're giving a sense of numbers in 2019-2020. And we've broken it down to say how many teachers are at basic level, how many teachers in the system are at intermediate, how many teachers are at advanced sense, so that members can get a sense of, oh, okay, we still have so many teachers who are beginners. Are operating at that level. We have so many who are operating at this level. We have so many who are operating at that level. So we have more than half of our teachers trained, because we have just about 450,000 teachers in the system. But you realize that then there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. If only about more than half of our teachers can operate at one level or another, so it means the rest of the teachers have not been afforded an opportunity to operate devices, operate in the technological space, and all that. So there's a whole lot of work that must happen. But if this must not be meshed to a number of schools, because what we do when we train teachers, it's not like we train all teachers in a school. In a school, we train about 10 teachers, and these teachers will be at different levels, and these are the ones who support the rest. So there are almost 50% of teachers there must not be seen as 50% of schools. This 50% is spread in almost all the schools. And so in every school, or in most of the schools, you'll have teachers who don't have the appetite for ICTs as yet. But it doesn't mean the school doesn't have anybody. It doesn't mean the school doesn't have a good number of teachers who are using ICTs. But you still have those that are lagging behind. You always have front runners, and you always have those who are lagging behind. So that is how the slide must be understood. And since the president announced in the February sauna, the slide here gives you the work that we did in terms of teacher training. That from February 2019 to February 2020, what have we done? We've been busy since the president spoke, and we trained 6,501 teachers during that period, and trained them at, in fact, this 6,501 is the number of teachers plus officials. So we don't just train teachers, but you also train subject advisors who must support them. Because it doesn't help when the teacher is equipped, but the subject advisor is clueless about how to support the teacher. So when you talk about officials trained, so these are out-of-school-based officials. And the teachers trained, these are school-based officials that have been trained. Now, future plans in terms of training of teachers, we're planning to train 1,600 teachers. And we broke chair this number per province. We were guided to say it's not enough to say we have trained 1,600 teachers. In which province? How many in each province? And so forth. So this is the work that happened since the president announced. Content. And this slide here, let me go to the next slide, and then I'll go back to this. This slide gives the amount of work that we have done in terms of developing digital content. A lot of work that we have done. We've got content for grade R. We've got content for grade 1 to 3. We've got content for grade 7 to 9. We've got content for mathematics up to grade 12, grade 4 to 10. We have developed all this. But now, on the far right, where we talk about the format, the digital format, to say what type of materials are these that you're talking about. When you talk about PDF, we say PDF. We also have what we call the electronic publication, the EPUB, or what we call the e-books. We also have what we call the LTML5, or what we call the interactive materials. Let me go back to the slide to explain what we mean by all those things. And we have included this slide for members for you to go back and say, so that you make sense of these technological terms that are there to say, Mr. Kavan, what do you mean when you say PDF? How should I understand you? So when we say PDF, so this is a type of content and then the description. For instance, when we say PDF, this is what you call the paper behind glass. You can't do anything. You are able to open it on your cell phone. You are able to open it on the device. But you as a user, all that you do is that you can just scroll down, and you're able to follow. You can go back to the previous page, you can go to the next page. But you cannot make any inputs into the content that is in front of you. You can't delete, you can't replace, you can't do anything. You just scroll. It's like a message that you received. You can't change it. It's like that. Now, when you talk about electronic publication or EPUB, so the paper behind glass is when we give you a book, you access it on your device, and you can read that novel from page 1 to page 2, and you can even finish it. But you can't make any changes to it. So we call it paper behind glass. It's just like if you've got a hard copy, but this time you're accessing it on the digital tool. Now, when you talk about electronic pub or e-book, here the user, who is yourself, you are able to page through the document like in a real book. So when you move from one page to the other, you don't scroll, but you can even wipe. When you wipe, then it flips like in a book, in a real book, it flips. You see it. It's not about scrolling, but you are able to move back and forth like in a real book. But the text and page length of a book are just, and this, we do it in such a way that it can fit. If it's here, then it fits. If it's here, then it fits. If it's in a tablet, then it fits. So it will always adjust according to the size of the screen that you are using. Because technology is such that sometimes when you move from one screen to the next, it comes out of alignment. So we do it in such a way that it does not, regardless of the tool that you are using. Now, the HTML5, which is what you call the interactive, this is where now you are able to see videos. These are motion and life. You are able to input. I can give you a questionnaire. You are able to respond to that, and the teacher is able to give children work. Children complete, and then they send back to the teacher. So that is the premium. It's able to play videos. It's able to give sound. It has audio. It has video, visual, and all that. So members, that is what we say. When you say, okay, you say you have done grade 3 numeracy and literacy, in what format? That is the question that you ask. Is it interactive or we say no, member, it's PDF and it's EPUB. And we also say it's also available this. It's also interactive. So it's available in all formats. But when you go to grade 4 to 9 mathematics workbook, we say it's PDF, it's also available in electronic publication, but it is not interactive. So children have the workbook, but even if they ask questions on it, they cannot input the answers on there, and that it is fed back to the teacher. The reason why we have not made much progress, though we have made progress with interactive materials, is extremely costly to produce materials in that format. Extremely, extremely cheap to give PDF, close to nothing in terms of cost. And the e-publication very is expensive as well, but not as expensive as interactive materials. Now, in terms of digital content, what have we done since the corner? The green light there below is telling you, it's giving you progress with what we did since the SONA last year. All the other material up there is what was available even before the president spoke. We have done it previously. In terms of provincially driven, where provinces do work, Gauteng, Western Cape, Free State, all provinces also develop material. It's not only DBE that develops material. And these are provincially driven content development, and it gives you a sense of what Western Cape has done, what Gauteng has done, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and other provinces. The revision material, digitized assessments, available teacher guides, and materials, including for SGBs as well, that have been... And these materials are available on provincial portals, on provincial websites. They are available, learners are able to access them. Future plans in terms of what we plan in terms of digital content. This slide is telling you what is it that we are going to do, and I'm trying to run to the end so that we allow members to engage with the presentation. We have this is an exercise that requires huge and stakeholder engagement. Like for instance, this is a list of all fora that we presented this plan, the plan that I just presented to you. We have presented it to all these fora. And today we'll also record that it was presented to Portfolio Committee. So that when we go forward, then it is recorded that the plan was presented to Portfolio Committee, and Portfolio Committee engaged with the plan, asked questions, and when necessary, Portfolio Committee provided guidance on what the department needs to do. And this brings me to the end of the presentation, and we're asking honorable members to discuss the presentation and when necessary to provide us with guidance. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mr. Chair, honourable members once more, I am welcome to get into the measures that we have taken as DBE together with the provincial DBE department. In as far as COVID-19 is concerned, honourable members, consequent to the President's announcement on Sunday, announcement of the state of national disaster in meeting yesterday to give input to the proclamation by communicating to CEM drastic steps to combat the threat of the coronavirus in South Africa, especially in our schools and school communities. And the steps, the drastic steps that have been taken in good regard to tourism also. And this was informed by the report, or what was highlighted by the World Health Organization, that is WHO, but also by the National Institution of Communicable Diseases, which highlighted the fact that schools are areas of high risk in terms of spreading the virus. Because you can imagine the number of learners that we have in the school, and once they've contracted the disease, it's easy for them to spread it into our community.
So that's the reason why we had to take this drastic step. But also to communicate to CEM measures to mitigate the impact of the closure of schools. And out of that meeting, there was clear consensus on the measures that are going to be taken. To this end, a circular number 3 of 2020 was taken out to provinces, to districts and to schools to communicate those containment or management measures that would affect, as I indicated, schools and school communities. And these are the measures that have been taken. I've identified 10 of them out of the 59, and I'm going to read them out to members. I'm sure members will also be favored with a copy of the circular. The first one being, schools will be closed from the 18th of March 2020 and will reopen on the 14th of April 2020. And this is due to what I've already indicated, the alarming increase of infections within the country over a three-day period, as highlighted by NICD as well as the World Health Organization. Schools have thus been identified as high-risk areas that could spread the infection easily to communities. For this reason, the following measures, as illustrated, have been put in place. These are the measures that have been put in place. We are going to amend the school calendar to make up for the lost days of schooling. The June 2020 vacation will be shortened by 7 school days, and September 2020 vacation will be shortened as well by 2 school days to make up for the 9 lost school days. All the school-based and non-school-based activities that require a gathering of more than 100 learners or people, for that matter, will be either scaled down or suspended or postponed until further notice. And we have also listed a number of mass gathering programs that are going to be affected by this step that we have taken. So we have listed among them, and the list is not exhaustive, spelling bee is one of them, the spelling bee competition that you all know of, the Sasuke, that is your music competition, moot court, school athletics, assemblies at school, as well as school camps. As you would know, that as we are approaching the holiday, normally we would have vacation camps for your matriculants, and in some instances for other grades. But in the circular, we are also imploring PEDs, districts and schools, to take advantage of this date of national disaster and to utilize this time effectively by ensuring that learners participate in established, stimulating programs such as Read to Lead,
we take this as an opportunity for us. Math buddies, math clubs, constructive holiday assignments and homework, etc., through the supervision and guidance of parents and broader community whilst learners are at home. We are taking advantage of that and encouraging that this should be in place. This will be supported through the provisioning of workbooks. We'll make sure that learners are provided with workbooks, they have worksheets, and they also have readers at least to support the activities that I have outlined. The DBE will provide guidelines on vacation schools or camps where they will be occurring to ensure alignment with the presidential proclamation on the state of disaster in South Africa. So what we have started to do at DBE as early as yesterday is to put together those guidelines to say what are the expectations, how are we going to conduct these camps, which means we are going to conduct them differently from how we have been conducting them because of this proclamation. So we're hoping that the guidelines will be out to schools before the schools close. During this period of declaration on the state of the nation, the situation will be monitored daily and regular communication updates will be pronounced by using only one channel of communication, because we are wary of the fact that we might be, you know, communicating messages that are conflicting in some instances, and that might confuse the system. So there will only be one channel of communication coordinated by the Department of Basic Education. And we're also making a point in that section to say that although schools have been closed, the closure does not extend to office-based institutions, meaning that the offices will continue to operate. All offices must provide hand sanitizers at the workplace as well as at any venue where smaller groups below 100 people are compelled to meet. All PEDs, provincial education departments, districts and schools must put in place a recovery program that will ensure that when schools reopen, learners are able to have those extra classes, extra activities to try to make up for the lost time. Provincial education departments are obliged to ensure compliance with the new school day and the arrangement for extracurricular activities. The reason why we have put this is because we are already getting calls yesterday asking if independent schools are also affected by these drastic measures, and we had to indicate that unfortunately all children belong to the state. In actual fact, we are saying the state is the custodian of all children, irrespective of where they are, whether they are in independent schools or special schools. So it is our responsibility to ensure their safety, and therefore the safety level will affect even our independent schools. Thank you, Chief. And this is the circular that I think will be able also to send to members of this portfolio committee. But I must also indicate that yesterday what was shared with us is almost the same circular, but that affects your ECD centers. So that has been crafted by the Department of Social Development, and that will also be forwarded to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dr. Mabuya, and Dr. Tavan. Let me now tell honorable members, on both, I think they will be responding on both. Honorable Sueba, Honorable Malaj, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable King, who's that? Is it Fanaval? Fanaval? Honorable. Was it that? And yours? Who says was it that? What?
We have our own thing.
Yes, but you are not going to have your own thing here.
know.
You don't sing outside. Don't impose your what do you call it? But why now must you come with your drama here of no man who must speak first? Jesus. Are you also there? Honorable, okay, it's Honorable Tuwela, Honorable Malachi, Honorable Fandepaus, no, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Fandepaus, Honorable King, Honorable Mashezi, and then Honorable Atonswe. We'll finish in that order then.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Let me start by welcoming the presentation of the ICT rollout. It is something that we hope will bring about the improvement in terms of performance of the schools and learners. The first question that I would probably want to ask maybe is of technical nature. In your slide 18, in particular, the first time you have a 5 teacher center, but you connect them 6. Which one is correct? Is it 5 or is it 6? In schools where some of these devices, in some schools, not all, where some of these devices has been provided, the computer centers or other labs remained locked for the better part of the day. How is the department ensuring that once these devices are provided, they are being used? How is the monitoring being done? Because it was seen that schools are more concerned about the safety of the devices rather than their use. During the presentation, it was said that they gather dust, probably because schools want to keep them safe and they don't use them. The training that is provided for the teachers, which is quite good, where and when are these training conducted? Do you certify the teachers after the training? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I only have some of the questions are covered by the Honorable Zwane. But the other issue that I want to check on the issue of the ICT is the infrastructure plan, because I know schools that must have these smartphones and iPads, they require a different infrastructure to be installed than the normal one that we exist in. And with the backlog that we are faced with, of especially in rural provinces like the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo, of we still have much schools or quasi schools in areas. How are we aligning the infrastructure development and the ICT program in those schools? Because they need to go hand in hand for them to be able to work properly. And the other issue is the issue of the security plan. So wherever you install this gadget, you need to have a security plan. We have seen in many other schools where they've been installed. A day later, there's a they are stolen. Now, we don't want to be working backwards, we should be working forward. Executive plan is needed. On the issue of the coronavirus, which I think no one has planned for it, there's no department that has set down and planned and said coronavirus is coming in 2020. This must be our plan. But what I wanted to check is that I know the date of the 13th, the 14th as an opening of schools. It has had an announcement and consultation that the president has done to announce. But even today, we don't know how far can we control it now. What is the plan that we have if by the 14th of April we are in a deeper problem than we are now? Every day we are not decreasing or increasing. Now, I just wanted to check with what is the plan moving forward to assist that process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I just want to check, I think that when the presentation mentioned that in some areas, children will be able to share the usage of the budget. And if then they share the usage of the budget, what is it and when they have to do homework at home, are they going to be able to, are they going to be able to take the gadgets to use them for homework at home? What will happen then? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I would like to know, I've recently received, this week in fact, a response from the Minister on ICT, and I've asked, you know, what are the details, and I was told it's laptop, desktop, computers, electronic whiteboards, digital, whatever, to 645 schools to date, all gadgets that there are, to 645 schools at a cost of 24.490 million rand. So if you read some of this, I mean, if you look at the number of schools, if you add data projector services, laptops, all of it, it comes to 4,697 schools, not 645. And then can you just also perhaps tell us what is the exact budget for all of this up until today on your presentation, whatever we have spent on ICT? And I would also like to know whether this presentation includes only DBE issuing to schools, or does it include all the private donors or whatever gadgets it might be? And Chairperson, then, does it include the losses we had, like for example in Gauteng, or were the losses taken out of here? If not, can we just have a figure on what the losses of some of these let me say resources, because they're not all gadgets, but mostly gadgets, actually are. Thank you.
Multiple questions that asked, so I'm just going to ask two questions. The first one was announced that we've asked to see what is in the office. I just want to find out how far we are on the curriculum finalization of that. How we put the teachers to actually introduce the office at the R3 level, even
that the same thing has not happened yet. And do we have workshops or working stations where they will be able to work, because that would be, robotics is more practical in nature. We all know that South Africa has got the highest usage of cell phones in the world. It's one of the highest. So then when you think of that, I have to ask the data cost. It's very high in South Africa. We're one of the highest when it comes to data cost. Was there any memorandum of understanding entered into with the three biggest mobile operators to ensure that the few schools that actually are connected, like your quintal 4 to 5, sometimes 3 schools, don't pay excessive amounts for connectivity cost? And then on the corona virus situation,
My concern basically would be that most of our kids, especially in rural areas, need to go to school because they need something to eat. So I would like to know what measures was put in place when we look at the school nutrition program, for that was a big concern for me. And also, when they return to school again, will you do a risk assessment and put alternative preventative measures in place now already for when that eventuality comes? Thank you. The risk assessment, is that going to be done? And also, coupled with that, the preventative measures that will be then put in place now already for that eventuality when learners come and we haven't contained the situation.
Thank you, Chair, and I would like to appreciate the both presentations, specifically the one of ICT. I just have a couple of questions. I think what we have seen specifically today is what is my concern is the fact that, you know, the Free State hasn't given gadgets to the teachers. So I don't know if I'm understanding well, but it looks like that's what it seems like. So I just wanted to find out, like, you know, what are the reasons for that and what is it that you're doing as a department to ensure that they do receive those gadgets as soon as possible. And not only that, you know, when we talk about, you know, developing our teachers in terms of ICT, you know, there is some kind of reluctance for, I think, which is quite natural for people to, at a certain age, to learn new things. So it's quite a challenge for teachers to be able to be comfortable with ICT within the contract that we have with all the service providers. Is there any way or a clause that you have added to say, like, can you ensure that you constantly assist the teachers to be able to be more versed with ICT? Because if you are not moving in that direction, then we won't be able to really compete with the global world when it comes to ICT. We might have the gadgets, but people that are actually not able to utilize them. So I think it's something that we really have to look at and ensure that, like, you know, really we work on it constantly. I mean, even myself, like, you know, as somebody that can be able to use a computer, it's not something that I'm like really, if I can stay away from, sometimes I'm like, okay, I can do things on my own without using ICT. So it's kind of an attitude kind of thing. You know, we have seen in Gauteng that a majority of there were schools that were robbed of the gadgets, which was costing us a lot of money. I mean, this costing Gauteng a lot of money. I just want to find out, have you, based on what you have, what you have experienced, do you have any insurance that now these gadgets can be therefore under, or are you looking at ways of having some kind of agreement with insurance companies? Because if you have an insurance company that is those gadgets are insured with, they will go to an extent of assisting on how to store the gadgets so that they don't have to pay for the gadgets when they get stolen. So they'll have that, that kind of additional assistance that that they can provide to schools, make sure that, like, in the first place, you have to have cameras at schools. And the cameras are not very expensive anymore. You know, the Chinese are really sell them really cheap. I have them in my house, like, outside. They're really, really cheap, affordable. And there's also an ABT also. They also have, like, security that they provide. That is also not really expensive. Is there a way that you can actually look into those and see that if we can be able to provide schools, especially the schools that have these kind of gadgets, to secure them, to ensure that, like, you know, those gadgets are safe. And also, I just want to talk about the coronavirus. I think as a committee, we have to take it upon ourselves to be able to assist the department in coming up with ideas. Because we might be facing a situation whereby after the break that has been proclaimed by the president, after that the situation hasn't changed or it actually has worsened. which means that a lot of our learners will have to stay at home, but then we have to ensure that learning and teaching and learning does continue. So how are we going to be able to provide that kind of services? And also, if you can look at teachers who are retired and principals who are retired, if they can come to the fore, should we need more resources and people that are professional to assist? So I think that as a committee, maybe we can be able to sit and say, like, how can we assist the department on this issue? And then the other thing is, like, when it comes to nutrition of learners, I know a colleague of mine has, Honorable King has mentioned it, but is there a way that, like, you know, we can have the army assist in terms of ensuring that learners do get food at home? Because obviously, like, at the moment, that they want to be getting the food, but is there a way that we can? The department can look into that, so who can log in to assist with feeding the learners during this time. And also the other thing that I should forgot to ask, why is CERSI not part of the service providers that you are utilizing for ICT? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to honorable members and officials. Thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Magowe and
Mr. ICT.
Most of my questions actually have been covered by latter speakers. I see Mr. ICT is, you know, is busy on the implementation of the president's pronouncement. You know, every time he speaks of when the president pronounced and how far are they, and thank you very much for that. I think one worrying factor, I think it's what the members have actually alluded to, the issue of the crime on schools. And how it is not actually captured to say how is it going to be resolved going forward, because I think whether we like it or not, it actually decreases the development of what the department is actually trying to achieve. I think it's a worrying factor and something that it was not captured in the presentation. Some of the challenges that we're faced with as a department, I think it must reflect as such to say these are some of the challenges that we faced with when we actually provide with the schools with these devices. I think it was a good progressive move by the minister to have hosted the round table, and it's not given that you see business, you know, assisting or in developing, more especially your public schools. You know, they mostly spend or invest in private or independent schools. But I think it was a good move that the minister, you know, hosted such a meeting or initiative to make sure that business also contribute in developing the schools, because why would it take, I think it's a lot of money. It's a very expensive project to roll out ICT in schools, and also to, you know, to be meaningful for all kids or learners to, and teachers to actually learn through the new technologies. I think it was a good move on the minister, and you must applaud her for that. You spoke of the 50% of teachers that have been trained as we stand or currently, but what is the plan going forward of making sure that all the teachers or 100% of teachers have been trained? I think we must also applaud the department for focusing on special schools, on rolling out ICT. And 292 schools were mentioned that they are going to be a focus for this financial year 2020-2021. I think it's for the first time as a committee we hear that focus has been given to special schools. I think we must also applaud you for actually putting them first, knowing that what they need, the devices that they need are more complex and very expensive. And it's better that we are also part of the people or learners that are they are prioritized in making their learner or learning easy. On the issue of the coronavirus, I think there should be a plan in progress. You know, we can't expect now everything will be sorted because we actually didn't see this coming as a country. But thank you for the briefing, Dr. Mabube. I'm sure as and when there are new developments, will be informed as such. As a committee and also as parents, and we really like to appreciate that, and also would be nice to have those the secular so that we familiarize ourselves with as we are sitting at home with our kids, and we are able to actually assist them with the work that they'll be missing at school.
Chairperson, I think I will post it for now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I was just saying now, Chair, that you know, for every negative thing, there is something positive. We came to work very nice this morning. There was no traffic for some reason. You know, on the road, we were so peaceful. There was we don't know where the people, maybe they are told not to go to work or what, we don't know. But it was a very nice but experience. You know, on a Tuesday I was doubting, what is happening? Am I fine? Is it Tuesday really or is it Monday? What is going on? But I think as far as the coronavirus is concerned, one thing that really needs to be worked on is the issue of communication. And like you said, there would be one communication. There was a fake letter on Sunday, and it's very authentic, signed by the DG, which was fake, you know. So there are sources also somewhere who are using an opportunity, you know, for something that is so serious. They are using this opportunity to make their own nonsense, if I must call it like that. But I think the government has responded very well, and especially the leading department. I think the Minister of Health has been really hands-on. I think he dealt with the issue very quick. He was very responsive. He was everywhere, and there were updates every day, you know. So the intervention done by government that the president has dealt with on Sunday, I think they are welcomed. It's just unfortunate, you know, because it just inconveniences many people. Like Honorable Mashezi was saying, other kids, they really want those meals. And what can we do? How can we make sure that they receive at least those meals? Especially for the ECD centers. Many parents are so now, they don't know what to do because they are supposed to be at work and then all ECDs are closed. And ECDs, they are actually one part that doesn't close, even if it's school holidays, because they look after the kids. It's an inconvenience. But nonetheless, what do we do? There are schools that have prepared for tours outside the country. And we know preparation for visas and paying for that, you do it maybe 6 months or earlier than the trip. Now the parents want those refunds, and or is it a matter of a school and parents? but there are travel agents involved. It's just a mess, you know, but what happens in situations like those ones, as far as, say, coronavirus is concerned? Coming to ICT, on slide 39, I think there is just a typo error there on your financial year, because it says April 2020 to March 2020. So I think it's supposed to say April 2019 to March. You know, it's a public document, so we just need to know how we deal with it. Slide 39. My concern is the implementation plan as raised here. The pre-implementation plan this financial year, but then there will be phase one, 2020-2021, and phase four actually, which will be post-implementation, will be 2023-2024. It is so difficult to deal with all the quantas as you move each year, because as you have said, that even the minister wants, when this administration ends, to say that this is what I've done and I've completed it 100%. But I think as a committee also, in terms of our own monitoring and evaluation in terms of this ICT thing, it's something that we would want to say, at least in our term, it has been dealt with, and it has been all our children, you know, it's going to be a very good thing to talk about. All our children are having now this gadgets, they are able to use them at home. What the Ministry of Education was saying yesterday, that in his province they are going to make sure that their kids are accessing the education material through portal. You know, for just MSCs to wake up and just say that, no, it's not a crisis really, we will make sure that our kids will be able to access their material through portal. But what I'm raising is the implementation phase. I think it's too, it's going to be too slowly. I don't know, but you are the expert, and you will be able to tell us better. And then on slide 22, where you are speaking of the provinces roll out, and the laptops given to teachers versus to the learners. I think there are just disparities here, because in the Eastern Cape, for instance, you are saying that you have given 64,000 laptops to the teachers, but then you have given only 3,000 to the learners. Who is supposed to get more? And why must learners get so less? Because that's really the least allocation you can give. But also, there is no allocation in Northwest and Mpumalanga. So which means nothing has been happening in Northwest and Mpumalanga. And in the Northern Cape, there was no procurement for the learners, but the teachers, 241, are having laptops. So they are using those laptops for who? And this program shouldn't be focusing more on the learners. And I also agree on the issue of the special schools, that probably their gadgets are too expensive, and they should be. They are 3 times more the price. But can you tell us in terms of the cost allocation? Because how is it versus to your normal schools? Because the money should talk in this instance. How is the allocation in terms of your special school versus to your normal schools? And did you in the quintiles? I think I'm not sure, but you would have to take us through. Did you include your learners at risk here, your learners that are at the a place of safety, and your learners that are at the correctional services, for instance, are they also able to help with this gadget? But also in the training of teachers, because as the presentation says that you are doing, you will do training of teachers per financial year. Now, a teacher that was trained in the financial year with the program started, how do you make sure that you keep on retraining the teacher? Because, you know, with all of us, computers, we get them every year, but the reality, you keep them there, you don't use them, and now and then you need that person that will assist you in dealing with it. Okay, I think let me stop there. I will come back to it. There's just one question that I don't see. Over to you, Dr. Mamoya.
Yeah, thank you. I think let me appreciate the comments and the questions that you have put, and I'm sure most of them do speak to the first presentation on the ICT rollout. Unfortunately, Mr. Kaban is here, so he will be able to respond to most of the questions that are based on the ICT rollout. But from the side of the coronavirus and the measures that have been taken, I think I can easily respond to those chairs. I think the first issue that I want to raise to the committee is the fact that this is a matter that affects all of us. So the approach is integrated. So it's not an issue of the Department of Basic Education only. All of us do have a role to play. So in the case of, for instance, the question that was asked by the chairperson on schools that might have had plans in place to undertake some talks, we have seen the response from, for instance, SAA, that has offered to say there's free cancellation of trips. So meaning that even tourism, even other sectors are also playing a role. And I also want to believe that schools, especially the schools that can afford to pay cash for, are schools that have the necessary policies in place with regard to the talk, school talk, with regard to the cancellation of trips. But I know for a fact that even your travel agencies would also have provision for that. So I think in that case we are covered. We know that those schools will be able to take the necessary measures. Yes, indeed, Honorable Adwoa, this is work in progress. And as we indicated, there will be close monitoring of the situation. And from time to time, we'll get communication with regard to what is happening on the ground. And as and when the situation worsens, perhaps issues of the nutrition program would be issues that will also be considered. But I must indicate that even yesterday, when we had a meeting, that was spoken about. But the minister made it very clear to say, for now, can we just look at the safety of our members? And the other matters will then come in later. So meaning that this is a work in progress. So as we'll be closely monitoring the situation, and there will be one communication channel, then we'll also be able to also bring in some changes in our plans to monitor or to manage the situation. So I think I've also touched on the issue of the NSNP, which we agree that for there are majority of our learners who are benefiting from the nutrition program. Some of them
That would be the only meal that they have every day. So I think it's something that would be considered going forward. Then the other one, I think, which was from, yes, the risk assessment, I think that will also, the approach will also be the same, Honorable Chu, to say that we'll monitor the situation closely, and as and when there are other risks that are coming up, we have already identified the risks. That is why we were able to come up with a plan that we have put together. So that will also be taken. There are more risks that might be identified going forward. As the situation worsens, then we might also have to revise whatever risk plans that we have. And the other thing was around the fact that whatever we have in place is trying to address the current situation, but we don't know what will happen going forward. As I indicated, the situation might get worse. So therefore, I think Honorable Malachi, what you were telling us is that we need to have a contingency plan in place, because we are not sure that by the 14th, the situation would have improved. So we spoke about that at the CEM yesterday, and definitely colleagues at DBE, including myself, will be sitting down and putting together such a contingency plan. And I think I have the fact that there would be other assistance from somewhere. Yes, we do agree, and I think the department is open to that. Already we do have a meeting with Vodacom, is it tomorrow, where Vodacom is saying to us, look, we do have a platform where we can be able to provide what you call digital, or what you call virtual classroom, so that learners who are able to access those virtual classrooms should be able to do so. So we are also inviting those initiatives from other quarters outside the DBE to say, whoever wants to help, you are welcome to come and present your case. Close monitoring, I've already spoken about that. Yes. And then I think those are the questions that related to the virus, and I've been able to cover almost all of them. Honorable King, you also made some comments around, or questions. There were some questions on grade R to 3 robotics curriculum. We have finalized the curriculum. The curriculum has been finalized, actually, for grade R up to grade 9. So that has been done. And the intention is that we are taking these 2 years, that is 2020 academic year and 2021, just to prepare the system for proper implementation of this curriculum in 2022 in grade R to grade 3. That's what we are doing. So amongst the other things that we are looking at as indicators of readiness, we are also looking at the institutional readiness, whether institutions that will be implementing this, do they have the necessary facilities, the necessary equipment, and so on. But that would also include the training of teachers, as well as the availability of, you know, your LTSM, that is your learning and teaching support system. So all those things will be taken into cognizance as and when we prepare the system for readiness to implement the first phase in 2022. So I think I've covered that. And can I just, Honorable Machete, the Free State, in as far as branches are concerned, I think colleagues must also remember that we presented on programs that are initiated by provinces, and provinces would also have their own priorities. As we indicated, for instance, the Eastern Cape prioritized teachers, with the understanding that teachers are very key in terms of, you know, teaching and learning. They are central. So they have their own reasons why they prioritize teachers. And I would assume that it is because once teachers are able to integrate ICT into their teaching, then you can then make sure that that also translates to the usage of ICT by learners at a later stage. So I just wanted to make that as a matter of maybe principle to say that provinces naturally would have their own priorities. But because the minister has now, in terms of the pronouncement by the president, has now shared the plan to say, now in terms of our plan, for phase one, we are all now going to focus on the special schools. Remember, prior to that, there was nothing guiding provinces. They were just providing assets as they wish. So now it's about what are the priorities as per the phases that were outlined by Mr. Kabat. So now they all know that we have to prioritize as special schools, we have to prioritize as farm schools as well as multi-grade schools. And service providers, whether they do also provide teacher development, I must indicate that the model that we are using for teacher development, whether it's ICT or other things, is that is such that we also use the skills learning to do this. We are not only dependent on the service provider. Yes, some of them would definitely, in terms of the obligation probably, they would also be obliged to provide teacher training. But in most cases, the training that you have seen there are the trainings that are initiated by provinces and they have been funded through the 1%. I think that what covers most of our training. And I think the point that we are also emphasizing in as far as the training of teachers is concerned is that the training must be safe and lost. I think that's the most important thing that we are emphasizing as far as training is concerned. And we do agree with colleagues that we also need a security plan, a sector security plan. So Mr. Kabane will also tell us if there are already processes in place to ensure that we do have this. I know that this is a huge concern for all of us, the fact that we can't go on with the implementation of this if we are not addressing the issue of the safety and security of the guardians in schools. And I hope that this will be covered. Honorable Malachi, whether the infrastructure plans that we have, are they responsive to the ICT plans that we already have? The ICT, the infrastructure plans that we currently have in the center, they also do make provision for ICT provisioning. So that is what I can say for now. And also, some of the grants that we have do also respond. Some of the conditional grant frameworks that we have, fortunately, also speak to the ICT needs or ICT plans that we already have. So security plan, I think we have to look into that and make sure that we have that for the sector as a whole. And the case in point, I think, is the unfortunate situation that we continue to experience in places like Gauteng. In Gauteng, there was quite a huge loss in terms of the budgets that were installed in schools. And I think the other matters, as I indicated, Mr. Kabane will be able to respond to them. I think I was just responding to those that we need, generic responses. But Mr. Kabane, through you, Chair, Mr. Kabane, then
thank you, Chair, and let me also express appreciation to honorable members for the stimulating questions that you have posed, some of which will be able to respond to, some of them will have to go back and strengthen our plans based on that level of engagement with the presentations. The issue of gadgets that have been deployed or resources that have been deployed and are not utilized and are gathering dust in the schools. The question was what are we doing as DB to ensure utilization, and do you have a monitoring plan to ensure that this does happen, that they are utilized? The answer is yes. We have a monitoring plan. We have even included it in our APP, where we sample a number of schools to go and check whether the resources that are being deployed are being utilized. So that is how serious we take the monitoring. That is even in the APP, and the Auditor General is checking us on that, whether we are doing it. Whether it's really for money, both at DBE level and at provincial level. The PPMs at monitoring, and the Auditor General is checking on us to ensure that we do that. So we'd like to assure members that we do have a plan, and we are held accountable if we don't do that. The issue of certification, DDG spoke to that. And maybe on the issue of infrastructure planning, let me just add to what DDG indicated, that we have developed norms and standards for ICT related to infrastructure. That there is no new school that is built that is not ICT enabled. So we don't have to break the walls again to fit in the infrastructure. It comes complete. With that, we do understand the history of infrastructure provision in our country, that we are still dealing with other schools that don't have basic features like the science labs, the computer labs, the media rooms, and all those things. We know it's a history that is coming. But we said, okay, moving forward, there is no school that will be built that does not have these specialized rooms. The role of ICTs, I think, like all other infrastructure provisioning, or how government is structured, it requires multi-departmental collaboration. And the whole issue of security, there is something that the basic education will be able to do, and we have done as a sector. And there are other things that will depend on the department, on the police, for instance, and that we will not be able to, at that level, combat criminals, that we are not equipped to do that. But we've got a sister department that is equipped to do that. What we do from our side is that we would ensure that these devices are put in 45 rooms. We would have cameras, honorable member, and the ADT, the armed responses. We would even employ one body securities who would overnight stay at the schools. So we do all that. But you do understand the complexity of crime in our country, that criminals that are determined, there's nothing that will stop them. We have had reports about securities who have been killed. Some were locked in rooms. They were done horrible things when they were guarding these things. There were other instances where a school built a double wall for this specialized school. And criminals come with earth moving equipment. The ganda. They run into this wall, they bring it down. So a determined criminal will, like members indicated, that this thing takes us backwards. But we are determined as a sector that we will not be detected by criminals, that we'll continue to create an education of high standards for our learners. But I'm highlighting the dangers and the challenges with regards to security. Sometimes it's an inside job. We deliver today, tomorrow morning they're gone. So somebody knows that they were going to be delivered. Mm-hmm. Somebody knows. And it might even be external people, the very people who deliver them, they come back and they take them. So it's extremely complex, and it requires maybe This portfolio committee is working with portfolio committee on security. I don't know what it's called. Yes. Yeah, so that they're brought in to say, how can you help us? And but where police are called, they do respond. The challenge is that some of this equipment is recovered, successfully recovered. But the challenge comes here. After recovery, the police are unable to take it back to the school. Because now this becomes an exhibit in court. So it has to be locked in court as exhibit on a case that will be only settled 3 years later. So, and before the judge pronounced the judgment, the evidence cannot go anywhere. So recovering them is one part, taking it back to school is at the other. So by the time the judge closes the matter, the judges are already obsolete. As one member indicated, that this thing, they change so fast, so rapidly. So 4 years later, when the judge pronounces the judgment on the matter, they can't be taken back to school because they're obsolete. They can't be used anymore. So this is a challenge that you are facing with regards to in infrastructure. The issue of if children are sharing devices, then what happens when they're at home and they're given homework, they have to do work on this, but they are sharing the devices. At the moment, we are taking a blended approach where possible devices are used, but we are not throwing away the old methods of delivering curriculum and managing how learners engage. So the work that the children have to do on devices, teachers will then decide what type of work do they give children to do at home and what work children have to do here at school. You remember the old model where we had computer centers at school. Children had access to computers, but they didn't take these home, but they were able to use it when they were at school. So decisions have to be made on when to use a device, when to use old methods. And we are not throwing away the old methods, including how they were working on paperless classrooms. When children go home, they are still given where they will write in their books, and then they bring it back. It is a vision of paperless classroom. The issue of what is the exact budget? The budget. We have developed a costed plan of ours, and it comes to around 30 billion rand to ensure that every child has. And these are the type of monies that the government does not have. That is why the importance of working with industry to ensure that we are going to meet some of these obligations. What makes things worse now is the austerity measures that all of us have to assist government to ensure that we operate on reduced budget, but still we achieve the goals. But what we do is that we go through the process of reprioritization, where we say, where can we cut so that we can drive some of the key programs. And so we're not folding arms, and we continuously engage with National Treasury as well to assist us on identifying those. So the cost is carried both by government and by private sector. The cost of delivering a solution that we have developed in an ordinary school is about 600,000 rands. But to deliver to a special school, it goes to about 1.6 million for just one school. 1.6 million. Hence we say it's costly for these schools, but we have to provide for them. The law provides that every citizen is equal. So they cannot be disadvantaged because of factors that have nothing to do with us. So we are committed to ensure that we provide to them. How do we deal with the issue of data that is expensive? I think honorable members would remember that about 2 weeks ago, the Competition Commission announced that they managed to get network operators to cut the data, and Vodafone was the first one to stand up to announce that they've slashed down the data. But from our side, SDE, we raise these things. But from our side, what is it that we are doing and that we have done? That we, through the regulator, proposed what you call the E-rate, which was gathered at and is law, to say all network operators have to build schools only half of what they've utilized. If a school uses 100 rands worth of data, then the school must only be built 50 rands. And that is law. And what we have done is that we have then developed flyers to inform schools about this, because the implementation thereof is a challenge, because network operator says the school must apply for the E-rate. And we are saying, no, they don't have to apply. They must automatically qualify. Once you give them devices, automatically you must put your system. So you are simply saying a school that will not apply, you will continue billing them 100% of utilization, which is against the law. If you qualify for this, then it must be given to you. They must not say apply. So that is what we are doing. But we have further also agreed with network operators to zero rate educational sites. Zero rate means they don't build them at all. So when you break into this site, you are not built for utilization. You can spend as much time as you want there, but you won't be built. The slight challenge that we have at the moment is it sounds like you don't need any data to actually get into that space. Whereas you need some minimal data to get what we call the landing page that will get it's like a border post. Once you go post the border, then you are onto the other side, then you are not built. But there's some fee that you must pay at the border post for you to get onto the other side. So we're dealing with that issue, though the amount is minimal. But we say it must be removed completely, because somebody who doesn't have 10 rand data will not be able to get onto the other side to access what is freely available. And it will be available to those who have the 10 rand to get on, so which means it locks out the poorest of the poor. And those who have 10 rand means nothing to them. And then they get into that side and then they take the benefit. The teachers receiving gadgets, I think the DDG responded to that to say it is provinces that would then prioritize. We give them the national plan, but DB does not impose on provinces. Provinces must then take the national plan and then go and craft provincial plans on what is that and how are they going to comply with what we indicated. Maybe just to summarize because of time, we have noted, Chair, that maybe we should have put a slide where we could have highlighted the challenges to say these are the challenges and this is how we plan to mediate the challenges. And the questions that were raised by members actually were in line with what you are saying, that if we could have put those things, many of the questions could have been answered. We do have the slide. I think we did present to the previous portfolio committee the slide on challenges, and we apologize that we did not put that to you to say the challenges with data and how do we plan to do it. The challenges with security and how do we plan, what are the plans to mitigate. The other one that members, they did touch on that, the cost with regard related to devices and how do we plan to do that, because he's saying what is the cost of all this, to say these are the challenges, that these things are costly, and if we are, and one of the ways of reducing the cost is that the minister put you out to that we need to consider what other countries are doing, like Kenya and Rwanda, where they have what they call education-specific devices. So you don't take the commercial device and then you put into the hands of the children. It may even assist us with issues of crime. Because if you make it education-specific, a criminal will say, I can't sell it anywhere. But as long as it can do anything that the one that is bought from the market for commercial use can do, then it has a market. Yeah, if I steal it, then I can sell it to somebody who needs it. But if I remove all other functionalities and I only remain with functionalities that would assist a child to learn only, then it would even assist. Other countries, what they do is they color code it. They will give it a very funny color, yellow. And all government supply devices are yellow. If you are seen with a yellow device, everybody knows that you stole government property. Those are some of the things to say. How do you deal with the issue of security and crime and all that? Putting checkers into these things, it's something that other people also proposed. The issue of insurance, don't you have insurance for these things? In the meantime, no, it's not cost effective to have in insurance on this. If 60 devices are stolen in one school in Soshanguve, as I indicated, the cost is about 600,000. And if in 10 schools they are stolen, you talk about six million. But when you have to insure all of them, you will have to pay about 10 million rand per month, for instance, to an insurance company. So the cost of insuring, when you do cost-benefit analysis, it will be cheaper to replace than to insure. But we're not throwing the suggestion out completely, but we are guided by government policies on insurance of government assets and all that.
I think that the issue, I'm just going back to the issue of insurance. I mean, I like the ideas that you're coming up to say, like, you know, the device should be education specific. But this is what has been discussed, and the department didn't implement that. I mean, this was something that was suggested, that we should go that route, but actually they chose to go the route that we are in now. So I'm just a bit concerned that, like, when you're saying that, like, you know, these are things that you are thinking of doing, your timelines are not allowing you to say, like, you know, okay, let's think about this. We need action. I mean, this is something that needs to be done as soon as possible. And we need to have assurance that, like, you know, this is the direction that the department is going. It's not that sometimes you're like, okay, that's what you're thinking, it might work, whatever. So we need some kind of commitment from the department to say these are things that we're going to ensure that these things are not lost or stolen. But the other thing is, like, you know, I know the insurance that people are saying that, you know, it's not feasible, it's not this and that, but I would like really to say, like, you take an example of one school and say, what does the insurance, how much did they cost? I know you're saying, like, I don't know if, like, you're talking in terms of ballpark here, or you have specific quotations that you can say, like, for a particular school of this size, this is what the insurance company has, and how many insurance companies have given. They give you different quotations on this thing. Have you done that to say, like, you know, this how much, or you're just thinking that maybe this is what it's going to cost? And also, you know that, like, the insurance is what they do. They go to an extent to make sure that you have certain things in place to determine the price that they're going to give you. If you don't have a fence, obviously the insurance is going to be higher. If you don't have cameras, the insurance is going to be higher. This kind of thing. What is it that we can put in place to ensure that they stay to school? If you talk about cameras, there are two things that will actually be able to assist us with. To ensure that, like, the graduates are safe, and also our learners are safe. So we'll be able to kill two birds with one stone. So have you looked at that? Because that's where we're going now. We cannot say that, like, you know, if you're looking in the school year, what is happening during breaks, we need to have cameras to be able to see that, like, you know, what is happening in that environment. It's not a matter of, like, can we afford it, can we not afford it. These are things that we need to move towards. But now we cannot just say, like, we can't afford them without having any price or value of how much it's going to cost them. And also try to figure out, like, you know, to say, is it better to have that or not to? But, like, I think it's something that we really have to seriously look into it and just not make any just assumptions as we go.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. The issue of the conditions, we have done it with the network operators. Because when they supply this thing, looking at the cost, and the cost of insurance. So when we're talking about these figures, it's something that we have looked into. to say how much would it cost to do that. And you correctly captured it to say the cost will vary based on various factors. That the quotation that is given to this one school would not be the same as the quotation given to the other school because they, yes. Yeah, so you're correctly capturing it. But it is something that we have explored and we continue to explore. And all these things are guided by government policy on issues of when network operators give you this thing, they become government policy. They're transferred into the asset register of government. And hence, we know how much it will cost. And the school would find it very difficult to ensure some of these things because of the cost that comes with insuring them. So it is not a ballpark figure, but it varies from one school to the other, and we have done that baseline. The commitment from basic education with regards to rolling out education-specific devices, we are hearing this for the first time. We've always said it. Where are we? Where's the result? What we have done as Department of Education, we have engaged with the relevant ministries. The first one is the National Treasury on developing a transversal tender on education-specific devices. So it's not like we have not done anything. It's a process. And we hope that we'll come to a point where there is that transversal tender and provinces will be able to procure from that. We have also engaged with the Department of Trade and Industry. So you understand, once you're talking about development of devices, you're getting into manufacturing, which is not the competency of basic education. So we have engaged with the Department of Trade and Industry that is assisting us with that aspect of checking and creating an environment where companies would be able to be established, including the possibility of having a state-owned company that produces these things. And these are some of the lessons that were learned in Rwanda and Kenya and Ghana, to say, listen, this is such a priority. It is the same like developing state-owned textbooks, that if you are to ensure that every child has a textbook, then you need to develop state-owned textbooks. But you'll always get a pushback from the printing and publishing industry to say, but now you are killing creation of jobs if you are going to do what we are supposed to be doing. So including having a state-owned factory where these things are produced is a model that other countries are using. Because somebody like myself who is exposed to these things would resign from government. You know government plan. You get onto the other side. You set up a factory. Because you know the government said, I'm going to set up a factory. And then you cash up on this type of things. So when these things are owned by government, it would then stop people like that who would then look at enriching themselves to say, I know government plans, and I've assisted in shaping that route, and then I jump onto the other side so that I can benefit. So we I would like to acknowledge that perhaps we should have captured that in this presentation to say, what is it that we are doing? How far are we? That we should have spoken about the development of those transversal tenders on education-specific devices and our engagement with other sister departments on what is that they do. So we depend on those departments for them to fast track. But I can report to you that the Department of Trade and Industry is working on. What do we call this? On ensuring that these things are not imported, because so that we also reduce import costs, that they're actually assembled locally, and we train the youth in our country to be able to assemble these things, and they don't have to come from outside of the country, where jobs are created there, and then you have to pay import costs as well for all these things to come. So, I would say this assists in strengthening the presentation to say, ensure that you leave this thing, because unless you put them here, members may not know where you are with regard to these things. And we appreciate all the input.
I think it's also important to note in the
back is 2009. DBE, together with Communications, had joint meetings where Vodacom and all the other networks came in. It was actually presented that it would be subject specific for education specific then. Because I remember at that time, lots of questions were asked if it was, the gadget was a type of a phone, so taken home or a tablet, they could do a lot of other things and the bigger risk you get out. And they were taught that it would definitely be education specific to overcome that challenge, if you want to call it a challenge. So maybe the next time we should have a slide on possibilities investigated why they are or why they are not, so we can actually revisit some of those things. And just on the insurance, I think the DE 2 weeks ago, I think I asked him that question, he also said it's not viable. But Chairperson, the concern is we as government are utilising taxpayer citizens' money to get this to school. And private sector. Now, I don't know if I'm in the private sector, say for example giving R1 million or R1 billion worth of gadgets to a school, would want to give again if it's been stolen, if I know there's not some precautionary measures taken into the investment that I've made. Why would I keep on giving? So I think maybe we should also at the next time get a proper presentation on the pros and cons of this insurance.
What are we getting from DBE? What are we getting from private sector? And how do we look at those?
No, I don't think you must respond on that. It's how she sees things versus how you see them. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Mabuya and Dr. Sawani. I think you've covered all the questions. We will only meet you after 3 weeks now. We are just like school kids. We are on. Hey! And this one is very nice. So we will be on recess till the 14th of April. And I think we will be starting with the budget process when we meet for the second quarter. So thank you very much. We are allowing the two of you to leave us as we continue with other. Welcome, Princeton. I know you are tired from Section 25, but you've been doing very well, Princeton. You did not rest.
I'll bring it back.
Which was led by the department. Dr. Mabuya was leading the
the presentation. Till page 4, on page 5, we had committee observations. To page 5, page 5, bottom, we had responses from the department. To page 6, and on page 7, we considered and adopted the minutes of the 3rd of March, and we attended the meeting at 11:45. Any corrections? Can you adopt then the minutes? I note then, Honorable Van der Waals is moving for the adoption, and Honorable Shabalala is seconding. I will get a question.
No, I was there.
Oh. And then can we... Can we just zoom on the program, Honorable Members? The second term will be starting on the 14th of April till the 15th of June. It's 9 weeks. We were advised that the budget process, we must do it together with the select committee at the NCOP. So I think all committees are gonna be doing that. When we come next quarter, so the budget process we will do it together with the select committee on education at the NCOP. No, select committee on education and technology, sport, arts and culture. And on the 15th, we will have a briefing by the AG, and then we will have a budget review. By DBE. On the 16th, the day thereafter, we will have it's all joint meetings, right? We will have a presentation by Faith and Umalusi, which is the entities that you have now, which you must go through, Honorable Members. And on the 21st of April, we will consider and adopt the minutes, and then we will have a briefing by Department of Health, by Culture, by Social Development, and we will have that briefing on the 21st, and on 23-24, we are proposing that we must have the workshop on the ECD migration. You remember we agreed that we must have a workshop on ECD migration, which will be today. So we will have it with those departments. It's going to be DBE, DSD, Department of Health, SAPS, and COPTA. Then we will have a leave period from the 28th to the 4th of May. And then on the 5th of May, when we come back from the leave period, we will then have a Limpopo department coming to the portfolio committee. We will engage, remember we agreed to engage the department on the portfolio visit, but also on the recommendations that we are having on the oversight that we had, those that were there on the oversight. But also there is an issue of scholar transport, which the scholar transport tender in Limpopo, which we want the department to also. So they will come with those presentations, because we'll give them the agenda, what do we want from them. And then on the 12th of May, we would have department briefing us on social cohesion and health programs. And then on the 19th, we will have the department presenting the introduction of coding and robotics.
and also the safety and security measures in schools, which will include infrastructure promoting. And then on the 26th, we will have the NGO, that is Dropout, to come and give the presentation on Dropout campaign against the school. But also we'll have the presentation from the department on Bella Bill. On the 2nd of June, we will have the fourth quarterly report by the department. And then on the week of the 9th to the 12th, we are proposing an oversight in Mpumalanga for 2 days and Gauteng for 3 days. So that is the program two. That's how it looks like. That is program four, PREM two. So we are hopeful that we will be able to start on the 14th. We are hopeful that there will be direction on coronavirus. If we can't, Parliament will keep us abreast on what we need to do. But if things are not going to change, that's how we are going to move with program two. If no issue, can we adopt then the program? Honorable Muratesa?
Jefferson, I rise. Jefferson, okay. Allow me to rise and move that this program be adopted in principle. That's presented. Thank you.
Any second, Mr. Shamalan? So, Masawala, so honorable members, let us wish you a well rest. It's not going to be a rest. There's constituency involved. There's but let's look after our kids, those who still have got kids. But we are just